Welcome back to the long-awaited, again, the return of the MLS Net Boys podcast. My name is Chase. I'm here with my good friend Jacob. It's only been maybe 3 weeks. How's it going, man?
Pretty good. I had to pull up Spotify to see what episode we're even on. We are at episode 58.
Let's go. 50. It could be at like 70 by now if we actually if we weren't lacking every episode that we said we were gonna do.
Yeah, good to be back. Last episode was June 5th. Came out.
that's why it's been almost a full month. Actually, this one might come out June 5th.
A lot has happened.
July 5th.
We're just gonna focus on the now.
Yeah,
the now and what's happening.
You don't want to do a four-hour episode where we recap every game that's happened over the past month.
Anybody who's listening to this is already an MLS sicko, so they're probably well informed. You know what's funny, actually? Our good friend Noah was telling me we were camping a couple weeks ago, and he said he was telling his coworker that his buddies have an MLS podcast. And how they like always talk about how MLS is like the best league to watch. And apparently he said that coworker was like, well, that's stupid. MLS, like, why would you want to watch MLS? I'm paraphrasing here. But if you're listening to this, coworker of our friend Noah, come on the podcast and debate us.
Yeah, come on, you coward. Hide behind our friend and slap us in the face with your dirty comments, you stupid coward. Made me mad. I was having a great day, dude. Gotta sit here and listen to these Euro snob trash comments. Just kidding. Please keep listening to our podcast.
We appreciate it. He was like, why should I watch MLS as opposed to the Premier League is what we were talking about. And I gave my reasons, and I feel like they were good reasons. But as we get into with some of these games, there's nothing like watching your local team like competing and like down the stretch in like a competitive game. Like, we were both at the Portland game this last weekend, and that's one example. But there's so many examples of games in MLS where it's like, wow, so many people are missing out just because they're an Arsenal fan or they're a West Ham fan, quote unquote, and they watch their YouTube highlights, you know.
I feel like I'll get some flack for saying this, but I feel like you can't claim yourself to be a true fan of a team unless you've actually been to their stadium. Like, I feel like that's like a requirement to be a fan. And I understand there's so many like huge Manchester United fans that live all around the world. I think it's stupid. I don't think you're a true fan unless you can like actually like be connected to that community, have been to the stadium. Like, yeah, I think anybody in the world could like watch a team and enjoy that team and, you know, learn about their history. But to me, you're not a real fan unless you can actually go to a game or you have been to a game.
And that's the interesting part for me is so many of those fans who are like who are super into the Premier League, I'm talking about American fans, they're the ones who are like the most anti MLS, which I have no problem with you supporting the Premier League or watching it for enjoyment. But it's weird to me if you do that and you like completely neglect whatever professional soccer team is in your, you know, local atmosphere, you know?
Just ignorance. Just people just like, I think people don't want to like admit that MLS is getting a lot better now. Everybody kind of wants to just go with the status quo. They're like, oh, the Prem's the best league in the world. That means MLS sucks.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, the Prem is better, but why not enjoy this product we have here? And it is getting much better. It's just different. And I think that's the part people don't like. It's a different league. It's Americanized in ways. And you always see these comments. I just saw one this morning, and it was, you know, some of the Euros like fan fest events outside where they got these massive crowds of people supporting their country. And some of the comments were just like, we'll never have this culture in the U.S. We'll never have this soccer culture here. And he was talking about the U.S. national team, people have said the same thing about MLS for years, though. And, well, it's like, yeah, well, of course we're not going to have that culture if you don't actually support the team in your area. Yeah. Like, these people in these diehard communities in the other European countries or in Germany that don't support the big giants, you know, they're not, they don't have that atmosphere just because, well, Man City was the best team in the world, Real Madrid, so I'm just going to support them. Why not?
I completely agree. I hate when people complain about soccer culture in the U.S. or they complain about the U.S. system, and they do absolutely zero to support, like, their support the growth of soccer in the U.S. Everybody, like, even with youth soccer, they complain about, like, pay to play, yet nobody actively does anything to fix it. And it's just, it's so silly to me. Like you're saying, a lot of these Euro snobs will just say that there's, like, no real soccer culture. And then they'll have a team that's like 30 minutes away from their house that they'll never go watch.
Yeah, that's wild. That's wild to me. And it just feels like there's a strong overlap in those two categories. We can just trash Euro snobs the entire night, and that would be fine with me.
We could do that when we play clubs later with our friends, actually. I think that sounds like a better idea. Just stir up some fire later in the chat.
Works for me.
Man. There's been a lot that has happened since our last episode, but one thing remains. Jacob and I will always go on a tangent about how much we hate Euro snobs and their trash takes about MLS.
That's right. Wild week of MLS. Absolutely insane. We'll get into some of the specifics here, but let's just go back with the last week. So it's international break. Copa America is going on. Euros are going on. And Olympic preparations is, you know, full steam ahead. So a lot of international players gone. But kicking it off with another Friday night game, New York City FC hosting Orlando City. New York City FC wins 4-2 against Orlando. Have you noticed NYCFC gets all these Friday games? I'm assuming just because the Yankees are playing on the baseball field.
They have nowhere else to play.
I don't hate it because it's nice to have like a Friday night game to watch as a fan, as opposed to you get 18 games from 4:30 p.m. till 10 o'clock at night.
No, I think it's cool having it spread out a little bit more throughout the week. But what about this New York City team, man? They've been kind of quietly putting together some good form and just rocketing up the standings. I mean, past three games, losses. I'll say that. But before that, though, I mean, they had some really good results and they had a really nice run of form, you know, beating New England, San Jose, the Red Bulls, Philly, Toronto. I mean, they had a really good stretch there kind of through May, like early June as well. And then they kind of hit a little bit of a speed bump, but they're back on track getting that win against Orlando. Looking good for New York. I think Nick Cushing was on the hot seat pretty early on in the season and then definitely got some buy-in from his players. I really appreciate it. I was listening to an interview from him earlier this month or last month, and he was talking about like how he thought it was most important for him to back his players no matter what, even though like there were some glaring issues with like Bakrar and stuff like that, like not being able to find goals. Like I really admire him as a coach because he takes a lot of the blame on himself and just backs his players to the hilt, and I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I agree. He actually scored in this game, second goal of the year. No, you're right, because Nick Cushing, if you remember five or so games into the season, when they weren't really getting points, they weren't scoring goals, this team looked kind of toothless for a bit. But that shows you, man, backing a manager, you know, it gets overdone in MLS at times, but there definitely is something to say about that cohesion, that consistency when you give a manager a run of games, kind of let them formulate a squad. Because New York City had a decent amount of new people coming into the squad this year, but, man, Orlando City, I want to talk about them real quick. 11th place, I had them doing great this season. Obviously, they're not. I had them coming in second. I thought they were going to be MLS Cup contenders. You had Oscar Perea as coach of the year in your predictions. They're in 11th place, only 3 points out of that last playoff spot. But, I mean, they've won 5 games this year. Things don't look great. Duncan McGuire, I just saw a tweet today saying he wants to leave in the summer, but Orlando doesn't even want to let him go anymore. So, like, they've got him in this, like, hostage situation. Their best player doesn't even want to be there. Where do they go from here?
I don't know. It's so weird because they still have so many of the pieces from when they were really successful the past couple years. So it doesn't really feel like they need to make, like, a drastic change, like, you know, firing Pareja or getting some difficulties over there at the mic. I don't even know if that got picked up in the audio, but definitely feels like they don't need. I really hope they don't make a drastic change and have something happen that they regret in the long run. Because I think Pareja is the right coach for this team, and they got a lot of the right pieces. Just it isn't gelling this year, and I think maybe adding a couple more pieces, getting rid of Lodero, that might have been their curse.
Hey, man, Rui Diaz might be available soon.
That's true. We'll talk about that later. But, yeah, I don't know. There's nothing that just seems like the clear and obvious issue for this team. So I'm not super sure what direction you go in, but I definitely wouldn't blow the squad up anytime soon.
Yeah, it could just be an off year, honestly. But moving on, Atlanta, who, like I said, is in that last playoff spot in the East on 24 points now. They got a big win over Toronto at home. Thiago Almada scores in possibly his last game for the club as he gets moved to Botafogo in Brazil and then to France after that. But Atlanta wins this game 2-1 because there was just an absolute all-time MLS moment. Did you see it?
I did not. I didn't catch this game.
So
I heard about it, but I didn't get a chance to watch what happened.
Thier. I don't even know this guy's first name. Jamal Thier. Never really heard too much about this guy. Plays on Atlanta, and game's tied 1-1, 97th minute. You know, one of the last kicks of the game. Toronto goalkeeper has the ball, and he catches it.
I did see this. You're right.
And Thier is just, like, hiding in the goal, getting a drink of water. And as Toronto's goalkeeper throws the ball on the ground, you know, while everybody else had long passed, he just sneaks up from behind. Thier steals the ball from the goalkeeper and then just smashes it in the net, and then they win the game.
I did see that. So I didn't realize that was, like, the winning goal. No, I saw that. There's this, like, dad referee I follow on TikTok that breaks down, like, a lot of, like, he'll record his own games and then he'll break down professional games and go through, like, the laws. And he broke down, he's an Atlanta fan, he broke down why that goal shouldn't have stood, actually. So Thier leaves the field of play intentionally as he goes to, like, grab a bottle of water, and then he re-enters the field of play, and that's actually a yellow card offense if you go by, like, the official rules of the game. If you leave the field of play and re-enter without the, like, referees, you know, like, calling you back on, if you do it intentionally, you know, if you're, like, running and you run out of bounds and come back in, obviously it's not a huge deal. But if you, like, walk off the field and then walk back on, that's a yellow card offense. So kind of crazy that it's, like, one of those moments that's, like, so influential. I feel like those, like, small rules kind of get, like, lost up in the moment. But in all reality, this shouldn't have been a game-winning goal for Atlanta.
Are they on fraud watch this week?
I'd put them on fraud watch.
Atlanta United. Regardless, big win for them because that puts them in the playoff picture for now. We're going to move on. Kind of a wild game. Montreal hosting Philadelphia Union. Philly's downfall continues. Montreal gets a big win at home, 4-2. Joseph Martinez scores, but no analysis here. The real moment of this game, Ruan scores in the 92nd minute. It's just piling it on for Philadelphia, against Philadelphia, sorry. And this puts them up 4-2, Montreal. So Ruan scores and just sprints, and out of his pants pulls out a Flash mask, like the superhero, I think it's DC. and just like celebrates with this skin tight like mask over his face. And Andrew Wiebe commented like, oh, this is really cool. But the real question is, did he have that in his pants for like the whole game? Because he didn't pull it out of his sock. He didn't pull it from like a board behind the stadium. He just reached in his shorts and just pulled this mask on. So he played a 90-plus minute game superhero mask in his shorts.
That's disgusting.
That is MLS.
That is disgusting. But really cool at the same time. I should have done that in the alumni tournament I played in this past weekend. just stuff something down my shorts and then score a goal and run like crazy. Put a mask on.
Skin-tight mask. That puts Montreal up to a cool 10th place. 22 points.
Looking good. Looking good for Montreal.
Next up, New England Revolution, man, hosting Columbus Crew. New England they were kind of cooking there for a bit, man. They had 7 points on the year. Then they had a turn of form. They're on 19 points now.
I think they had like 4 wins in a row, right?
They won 4 games in a row, hosted Columbus Crew. Started off pretty well. They went up 1-0. Emmanuel Boateng, who's had a pretty good year, honestly.
It was a nice goal. Like, picked the ball off some sloppy passes in the back, and then, like, a nice little chip to the back post.
Then Columbus scored 5 goals. Cucho, Arston, Rossi, Camacho, Marrera.
My favorite goal was Arston. That guy is a superstar out of the draft. Just picked the ball up, nice touches out from his feet, and then just bangs it like kind of curling away to the back post.
Love to see a super draft pick just being a legend in MLS.
I want more teams to operate like Columbus, dude. The amount of like just young super draft players and just young players coming through there that in previous eras of MLS, their name wouldn't mean anything for the next like 5 years until they're like a veteran that gets traded around to multiple different teams. I love it. I love it so much.
Kind of going off of that, they just acquired Aziel Jackson within the last couple weeks as well from St. Louis. One of the better young midfielders in MLS, so it's like the perfect place for him to kind of develop his game under Wilfred Nancy. That's going to be an interesting one to watch.
It's kind of going to be interesting to see where he fits in that formation because they play like a 3-4-2-1. I'm assuming he's going to play one of the two underneath that striker because he's so good with the ball. He's technically really strong. He's good at driving forward with it. Exactly what I think Wilfred Nancy wants. But I've heard some people saying with Aiden Morris just being sold, he might end up back there. It seems like a Wilfred Nancy thing to do, like bring in a guy like that and then just turn him into like a stud defensive midfielder somehow.
Eric Williamson to the Columbus Crew, converted to a number 6.
I would hate that, dude.
Big win for Columbus. Kind of starting to get those wins, those points after that heartbreaking CCL loss. But the Red Bulls hosting DC United. This is a classic MLS rivalry matchup here. And a 2-2 draw at Red Bull Arena. Jared Stroud, the villain of this podcast, gets, I want to say, his second goal for DC. Point apiece.
Not much else to say.
I mean,
Red Bulls, they've been fun to watch, and I think they'll be happy that Lewis Morgan is coming back from the Euros pretty quick.
They didn't even have to turn off the plane
for
the Scottish team by the time they got there, man.
Oh, man.
Dallas hosting FC Cincinnati, and same thing. I feel like Dallas was kind of cooking for a few weeks after they fired Nico Estevez. A couple games, I would say. Wow, I just got electrocuted almost. They have that heartbreaking game to Seattle last week, and then they lose at home to Cincy. 1-0, Lucas Oriano. That guy has been fire for FC Cincinnati.
I feel like they're not going to be able to hold on to that guy for long. He's going to be sold for some money here pretty quick.
Which is funny because they bought him because their other younger Argentinian like winger fullback.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens with this guy. But he was kind of like a slow start for him at the beginning of the season, but he settled in. I think the team's kind of learned how he plays. He's kind of learned the system a bit more, and now he's looking like a true like top left back in the league. I mean he's obviously the best left back right now.
Completely agree. So Cincy, another big win, keeps them right on pace with Miami, with a game in hand. We didn't
talk about this, sorry, but Matt Miazga out injured, and as of this week he's put on the season ending injury list. So it's interesting to see what's going to happen with Cincy. They're pushing for another supporter shield. They're right up there. Their defense didn't look as good in this game. I mean, Dallas put up like almost 2 XG. It was like 1.9 XG or something. Cincy is a team that I think relies heavily on a strong defense. So going to be interesting to see if they bring in a guy to kind of take Miazga's spot, at least until Robinson gets back from Copa America, which could be after today. I mean, we're recording this during the Uruguay-US game. Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with that squad.
Zach McGraw, you are FC Cincinnati.
I was listening to Extra Time, and they were talking about Matt Hedges seems like the profile player they're looking for. Veteran, tried and true.
You know what you're getting with Matt Hedges. That would be that's a move that just really makes my day in MLS. You just got like a veteran center back. Every team needs one of those Matt Hedges guys if you're like an MLS Cup winning squad.
Who was the veteran center back you had in FM that just screwed you over because he was slower than a snail?
I spent millions, then that's not a joke, on Robin Jansen from Orlando City, and that just didn't work.
Oh, I thought it was like, is it O'Neal or?
Oh, yes.
Shane O'Neal.
Also.
That was the other one.
Yeah, I brought him in to kind of shore some things up, and that guy, every time he got on the pitch, would score a comical own goal, like concede a penalty in stoppage time. It was the most like anti-football signing I've ever had. He was like a paid like espionage member from some other Western Conference club in FM. It was crazy.
Oh man, that's awesome.
Anyways,
let's move on.
Houston Dynamo hosting Charlotte. They had the rapper in the stadium.
Famous Dex
going sure man. hyping up the home team. They get a win over a good Charlotte team. They're playing at home. You know, it was kind of nice because Houston has Hector Herrera, and Hector Herrera made some comments pretty much saying, like, I feel like I should have been in the Copa America squad for Mexico, and they're not, like, looking at players like myself or Alan Pulido, he thinks, because they don't want to, like, work with MLS. This was all Hector Herrera's words, but for Houston, it's a huge blessing because they get him. They don't have to deal with an absence like that. And they just signed a new DP number 9. So things are looking good for the Houston Dynamo.
Good to see. It definitely seems like Charlotte. I mean, they've been good. You know, they've been there's nothing wrong with this Dean Smith squad here. But they're definitely in need of like another attacking option, like a DP. And as of this week, Karol Swiderski is coming back once he's done at the Euros. Kind of cool to see that happen because Dean Smith, when he first came in, he like immediately said, like, these aren't my DPs. Like, I'm going to get rid of them, which was a bold statement that I've never seen any MLS club do. I've never seen any coach do. But for Dean Smith to kind of like track back a little bit, and then also like Swiderski to prove that he's valuable enough for both of them to kind of come to an agreement that Swiderski's going to come back, I think it's going to benefit this team a lot. They need somebody up top that's a little bit more of like an attacking presence. I mean, they have like, I'm spacing his name, the rookie striker up there, that young guy.
Patrick Ogimon.
Ogimon, yeah. And he's like just a wrecking ball up top. That guy's good, but you kind of need somebody else that can be a little bit more finesse and kind of help build your attack a bit more than just a pit bull that's going to run up and blast the ball as hard as he could at the goal.
That guy's going to be an MLS cult hero if he sticks around.
I want to see him and Samuel Adeniran on the same team, because that's just two forwards cut from the same cloth right there.
You mentioned Karol Swiderski. Him coming back on loan, Dean Smith confirmed. Does that change the game for Charlotte?
I think so. I think that helps them a lot in the attack. I think that kind of, and that seems to be their not, I won't say their biggest issue, because I mean they've been producing, but I think that Swiderski helps a lot more with creativity up top, which is what they need right now.
I concur. moving on, Sporting Kansas City, man. Are they making the old PV push? They win 2-0 against Austin.
And that sounds like a dance move. The old PV push.
For now, though, Kansas City's still stuck in 13th place. They are 11 points off of the last playoff spot. There's kind of a separation occurring here in the West. You've got the top three, LAFC, LA Galaxy, RSL, all within 3 points, first through third. Then you've got 4th place through 10th, all within 4 points.
That's wild.
And then you've got 11th through 14th.
You know what's so crazy to me is, like, how tight it is, and then the way, like, a lot of the media around MLS has been, like, focusing on these different teams, like, the amount of coverage Colorado has gotten for how good they've been. And then everybody was so down on the Timbers, and now you see, like, Timbers are 1 point behind Colorado. Or how much coverage there was for Vancouver and how great they've been, and now they're down in 8th place tied with the Seattle Sounders that were, I mean, rightfully so. The Sounders are getting a lot of negative coverage. I mean, more so than usual. They were still getting some love for the most part. And then you see, like, an Austin team that just gets dunked on. And, I mean, they're in 10th place right now, but they're 2 wins out of 4th place right now, which is just, it's insane. It's insane how tight this league is.
Yeah, and honestly, like, all these teams, if, you know, this, it's crazy because some of them have had really good runs of form. Portland, Austin, Seattle lately. Vancouver's been kind of down in the dumps lately, but all it would take was like 1 or 2 wins to completely change the trajectory that's been occurring. So,
I mean, even like the bottom half, like FC Dallas, I mean, they string together like a good month. You know, they get like a couple wins and a draw, and they're right back in the playoff picture.
Seb Alajet just...
Yeah. They love the boy.
goes insane with Logan Farrington.
Logan Farrington, come on the show.
Yes. Anyway, good job, PV. They fired, actually, at Sporting Kansas City, their technical director, so some you think that's the problem?
That's so funny to me. It's like you were saying last time, where, like, they tried to fire PV, but he's just so menacing. He's like, "No, I'm not." And they just points. He's like, "Fire that guy." And they just fired the other dude instead.
Makes you just realize, like, they're all sitting together in some, like, board meeting. They're like, "What's going wrong here? What's, you know, what needs to change with this club?" Firing Peter Vermees just doesn't even come up once.
I feel so. What if he's really just some, like, just like sociopath dude who's just like manipulating the entire club, and he's feel bad for like the kit man next or something's gonna get the boot.
Dude, he probably owns the club at this point. I don't even know who the owner.
He got stock options on SKC or something.
I don't even know who the owner of Sporting Kansas City is. I'm gonna look it up right now because I've never heard of it off the top of my head. I can't think of who it is.
It's just Peter Vermees' dad.
Yeah. It's a sporting club. Owns formerly on... It's an LLC. It's a group in Kansas City that owns a portfolio of athletic organizations. That sounds like a pyramid scheme Peter Vermees, like, made in his basement on his computer. He probably owns this team as well.
Peter Vermees is the third highest paid coach in MLS, $750,000. Do you know who the top two are?
Is it Tata Martino?
Yep. He's tied with one other person for first.
First, wow. West or East Coast?
It's West. So Tata Martino gets paid $1 million a year. He's tied with a Western Conference coach.
Greg Vanney? It's not Phil Neville.
It's Phil Neville.
Really?
Phil Neville is the highest paid coach in MLS.
Why? He's been doing good lately.
I have no clue. That's so crazy to me.
It's weird that you would give him that as his initial contract.
After being a pretty like a failed coach in MLS.
Right.
This is an interesting list. I love that he's getting paid more than Brian Schmetzer, though. That's awesome. Yeah, Greg Vanney gets paid half as much money as Phil Neville.
Oh, man. Well,
oh, man.
Let's hope it stays that way. And that,
dude, Wilfred Nancy's on $350K a year. That's disgusting.
Well, Phil Neville is three times the coach. Actually, I saw a stat. I don't think Phil Neville's ever lost to Wilfred Nancy.
What, no.
Going back to Miami and so I mean,
yeah, that justifies that
no, it makes
that's what the front office was looking at when they gave him his contract.
Well, dude, he hasn't lost to Columbus or to Wilfred Nancy, and Nancy won MLS Cup, so he's pretty much better. Confirmed.
It's basically better. It's just funny looking at this list and seeing guys like Luchi Gonzalez gets paid the same as Wilfred Nancy.
Who's the bottom?
It only has the top 10.
Ah.
So, the bottom of the top 10 is, I think the interim coach for Chicago Fire.
Frank Lopez?
I believe so. Yeah.
They got him in like
cut off. I can barely see Chicago Fire, and it's 159,000.
They got him like on 45K in a bed in the stadium when he gets fired. So he can sleep there till he gets the interim tag next time.
I cannot believe that Phil Neville is the highest paid coach in MLS.
I haven't heard many people talk about that. That's,
I mean, this is all being pulled from Transfermarkt, but I feel like that's generally a pretty reliable source. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's wild.
I'm in awe of this right now.
I'm going to move on to Nashville hosting Inter Miami. Miami missing Suarez and Messi and their players that are on international duty. They win 2-1 in Nashville. Jordi Alba with a just insane goal. Miami keeps winning. Cool. Top of the shield.
Miami doing Miami things. This team, I know we kind of like talk crap about them at the start of the season that there's going to be a lot of injuries, a lot of these old guys. The more I've watched them play and the more I've seen other players step up, this team has been built so well. I mean, granted, they may have bent some roster rules here and there, but it's really impressive to see what they've done with this team. And I was thinking about it recently, and they've kind of set themselves up for future success. As much as they've set themselves up for the now, all these young South American guys that they're getting that just want to play with Messi, they're going to be able to sell for like a pretty substantial profit to Europe. I mean, we're already seeing it with like Diego Gomez is getting big offers from European teams and South American teams again. I don't know. It's kind of, it was really smart on their end. They got Messi, and then they're getting all these young guys that they're going to be able to develop, that are going to do something for them right now, and then they're going to sell on for a profit, and then they're going to establish themselves as probably the top location in MLS for like young South American players to go to that want to get sold on to Europe.
I hope not. I hope they rot.
But I hope they join the Super League and never play in MLS again.
From one MLS media darling to the next. The former, I should say. LAFC wins 3-0 versus Colorado. Bogush with a hat trick. That guy's been good this year, man. Stepping up, especially with, you know, that kind of absence with a DP forward up top. And yeah, quietly in first place, at least quietly to me and Chase, it feels like. They're on 40 points. Honestly, they're not far off of Miami's point total or Cincinnati. 2 points per game versus 2.1 for Cincy and Miami. So they're having a good year as well.
They've looked so much better once Steve Cherundolo remembered that they can play with the ball rather than just like playing like counterattacking all the time. They've looked really good. My favorite thing about this game, Kevin Cabral remembering his LA Galaxy days and how much he hates LAFC and getting a red card in this game. Love to see it.
That always makes me wonder, because when you have a player who is a part of a rivalry like El Tráfico, for example, or Cascadia Cup, or Toronto, you know, Montreal, how much of those feelings do they harbor when they move clubs? I'm sure they still, for the real villains in those rivalry, they still love, you know, going against that squad, right?
Like guys like Ozzy Alonso, when he left like the Sounders, it still felt like there was like that hatred for like the Timbers when we'd like see him again, you know?
Because I remember Chicho Arango, I think I referenced this a while back, but when RSL played Philly, and Chicho was on RSL, obviously, but he used to play for LAFC, and a bunch of Philly fans were kind of like talking crap, like in the comments on Twitter. And Chicho Arango just responded with him holding the MLS Cup that he won over Philly. And so, like, that guy still has some bad blood and just fiery Twitter interactions.
I love it.
But the game of the year in our hearts for Chase and I, Timbers 3, Minnesota 2 in Portland, the Dairon Asprilla heritage match.
That may have been the closest I've ever been to crying at a Timbers game once that game ended. It was sad. The 9 years at the club, I mean, he's something else, man. There will never be another Dairon Asprilla.
Somebody who defied, he really did defy like all expectations, because he was brought in as like a, oh, cool, younger South American winger, could be all right. Was pretty disappointing at first, and then just turned up with big moments. And I think Matt Doyle explained it best, because he was writing up about it, and he said, yeah, we lost one of our cult heroes in the league today. And he said, like, no, but he was actually like a legend in Portland. He's like, I'm not even joking. Like, players like that with the skills and the moments and the weird moments against your biggest rival, those like help the culture like of the league and like of your club, and it makes like fans a fan, you know?
Yeah. No, he's the definition of like the streets won't forget.
I saw, yeah.
That is the absolute definition. Like, that guy is somebody that, like, he doesn't have the stats to back it up, but just as influential as like those Ring of Honor guys at the Timbers. You know, you see their name hung up in the rafters. Like, that guy stayed with our club for 9 years. There's a lot of times where he wasn't the starter, came off the bench a lot, but an absolute legend of the game. I think most neutrals who ever watched him, other than Sounders fans, would probably agree that he was just like a fun player to watch. And one of the only Timbers players that's ever been posted on 4-3-3, like multiple times, dude. Like, that guy has been posted on so many random soccer Instagram pages.
Bicycle kicks, insane skill checks, like,
yeah,
that guy. And you know, cool thing for him was he's been a part of every single trophy Portland's won. 3 Western Conference titles, 1 MLS Cup, and then the MLS's back tournament. And I think he played in every single game, if I recall correctly, so...
That is crazy. The you know, not only the Timbers, but the league lost a little bit of magic, and I don't think it's ever going to be quite the same. You know, the other players will come and go, but it's like a turn of the page for the Timbers and the league as a whole. It's definitely very sad for
it legit, Jacob and I. It legit made me pretty, like, down, actually, when I was thinking about it afterwards.
I was pretty bummed when he was walking over, and you know what, like... almost like made me choke up a little bit seeing like Zarek Valentin run over and like give him a good hug, like And he like held him. He like held him, like tucked his head in, held him there for a good like 30 seconds. That one hit me, man. Seeing two Timbers legends like that just embrace.
Zarek Valentin's like Eric Miller, like 0.5, like.
Stop disrespecting ZV, bro.
Great value. Hey,
this doesn't gotta be about ZV. We're talking about old
Dyron
DA27, baby.
A part of Portland Timbers Football Club died on June 29th, 2024. May he rest in peace.
Are also starting a GoFundMe so that we can go to Colombia and watch him play.
Atletico Nacional. Yeah, if anybody's interested in...
Anybody interested in the way day down to Colombia? If anybody listening to this has a place for us to stay in Colombia, please reach out.
Dude, I don't think this will happen, but I feel like when a player like Asprilla, like a profile like him leaves and goes back home to like Colombia, South America or something, within like a year or like 8 months, they're back in MLS. It'll be like, Rapids have signed Dyron Asprilla on like a TAM contract.
Do you think he would go to a different team in MLS though? I don't know if he would. He spent 9 years with the Timbers, dude. I can't imagine him going to a different team. I know he had his differences with the front office, but...
So the funny thing I heard, Phil Neville in the post-conference said, like, we wanted to keep him. He said he just wanted to go back home at this point. So I think Phil was kind of indicating, he kind of had some comments like, you know, when you have this chance for, like, your last contract possibly and being close to your home and your, like, family, you know... kind of you have to take it. So
yeah,
because yeah, I know he was mad at the FO. Probably was a combination of both, honestly.
Yeah,
I don't think he will, but I could see, as long as it's not Seattle or Vancouver, I could see him doing it personally. If to me, maybe. I feel like
the only other team in the league I could see picking him up though would be like a Colorado, maybe like a Dallas.
I was gonna say Dallas
picking him up. I would have said like Houston if it be like pre Ben Olsen, like
3 years ago.
Yeah, like pre BO. Like,
I feel like when a lot of players like that leave MLS, they kind of get like not homesick because they went back home, but like MLS is a league.
Portland is his home, man.
MLS is a league that takes care of its players. They have a good PA. They have good relationship. They, you know, they pay the bills on time. They do. I'm not saying Colombia does any of those things, but they do a lot of off the field stuff really well for players, and they take care of them and their families. So, man, one can only hope because
dude, he spent a third of his life in Portland.
Probably raised his kids here, and you know, got married or lived with his spouse here. So.
Yeah, I don't know. He was part of that like Colombian revolution in the Timbers, like him, like Chara. We have a lot of Colombian players, and it was kind of cool seeing all those guys after the game. Like the amount of times I've seen that guy like walking around the field with Diego Chara's kids after a game was, I don't know. It just took me back. I mean, 9 years of my life I've spent watching Asprilla.
Yeah, it definitely feels. Like a new era is coming, but Diego Char will be there still.
He's going to be there forever. If Diego Chara doesn't retire with the Timbers, if he goes back to Colombia, I think I'll legitimately cry. I think I will cry the day Diego Chara leaves the Timbers. Probably I'll be more sad than when Valeri left.
I concur. Once again.
Who's a young... All right. Wait a second. Who's a young player at the Timbers right now?
Who's the next Dyron
Asprilla?
Who's
the next one?
I was thinking in my head, Antony, because he's had these flashes, but there's so many games where you watch him, it's like, what is he doing? What is he doing on the field? But then he has these insane, like, skill check, Elastico, and yeah. All these flashes of brilliance. And then you look at the, like, stat sheet for the year, and it's like, what, 3 goals this season? And
but it'll never be enough to earn him a transfer somewhere else. And like enough interest where he could like wait to be a free agent and like get a better contract.
And I was just telling my wife this, like, because the vibes are high right now in Portland. You got a really emotional game like that, a lot of wins, and when the team is playing like that, and you've got players like Asprilla who are scoring in these big moments, like, you got to cherish those, because you could be a club like San Jose who hasn't hosted who hasn't won a playoff game in like a decade.
They haven't had an even season where it's been equal wins and losses and whatever since 2012.
Right. And yeah, they won the Shield that year. And so it was like one really good. It was 2013. Really
2012 is when they had a positive season. Yeah.
So it's been a long time, over a decade. And when you have a player like Asprilla who always turns up in playoffs or big games or scores against your rival, that's something special. I mean, we'll get to them, but Rui Diaz for Seattle comes to my mind.
Yeah.
You got all these.
It's something special having that. I don't know. I mean, we both were at the game, but that was the first time in a long time it felt like the same atmosphere as when like Asprilla got signed by the Timbers. Like that game felt like there was a
buzz in the air.
It was won by like the crowd, because like the chants were loud, the stadium was rocking, and it every time Asprilla got the ball, the crowd was like up on their feet cheering for him. But it was probably the loudest I've heard the Timbers Army in the whole stadium in a long time. And I felt like it was like a culmination of all these moments that Asprilla has given the club. It was something awesome to be a part of.
Yeah, one of my probably top three moments as a Timbers fan, I think that game was unfortunate for Minnesota. They lost.
Down to seventh place, four losses in a row. Losers. Oh, hey, man. Your cult hero just stopped showing up from preseason.
Hassani Dotson.
Oh, funny you say that, actually. I was going to tell you this before we started. I totally spaced it. Leaving the stadium, I saw like a gaggle of women, old women, like five of them, all wearing Hassani Dotson jerseys. And they're all like old, like 50s, 60s, like old women with gray hair, just standing on a street corner in Portland wearing Hassani Dotson jerseys. Well, and I was this close to asking if I could get a picture with them, dude. I was so close.
That should have been a no context MLS picture. He played at Oregon State, and I'm pretty sure his wife or girlfriend is from here. I could be mistaken. But the funny thing is he got a red card last week, so he wasn't even playing. He might have been there, but he wasn't playing or anything. So.
Oh, man.
That is wild.
I was so close, dude. Just these five old women who are all on their phone trying to figure out where they need to walk next. So they're like right on this street corner at the top of the hill on that back entrance to Providence Park. You know what I'm talking about? Like up there, we'd stop, like walk past him. And I was so close to being like, can I get a picture with you guys?
That would have been legendary. That would have been our first Instagram post. That would have had to have been.
Just me with five old women wearing Hassani Dotson. That seems like a cursed AI image.
Oh, man. San Jose, Cali Classico, hosting the LA Galaxy. This one's at Stanford Stadium, big crowd. You already know how it goes down here. And you already know San Jose lost 3-0 at home. It's just all gone wrong, man.
Oh, man.
I don't even want to ask you, what do they need to do? We've talked about this like six times this season.
Yeah. I mean, and part of this is like LA Galaxy's.
They are a good
team.
They
look great. Like LA Galaxy to me right now looks like an MLS Cup contender. They're not going to be pushing for the supporter shield, but they seem like that perfect team that's like right in the mix. They're not too concerned about expending themselves to like, you know, end of the season. They're not really pushing for like a supporter shield. Like they're already in a home playoff spot. This seems like the team that's primed to make a surprise playoff push.
A terrible team to face in the playoffs.
Oh,
would be the Galaxy. I don't know why I said that like Yoda, but no. I would not want to be playing this team if I was facing up another MLS squad.
Dude, a team that can pack it in and then have Joseph Paintsill and Gabriel Peck on the counterattack would be terrifying.
They're very fun. Those two wingers are really fun to watch, both of them, and they complement each other well. Once again, most important thing for me, Ricky Puig came off the bench, played good, didn't get a goal or an assist, but still got team of the week, so cool MLS. They got to get their PR out for their stars.
Yeah.
But the real thing here was Sasha Kleshchen on the MLS 360 show. He wasn't there this week because he was on vacation. He was in somewhere in Europe. I forget where. But they posted a clip on Twitter of him being gone in the studio. And Ricky Pooge just posts, like, I forget exactly what it was, but he pretty much posted, like, stay in Europe with, like, a laughing emoji and, like, an exclamation point. I think he feels like, because he also this last week posted all the season predictions where people had the Galaxy.
I saw that, yeah.
And man's just been, like, this guy's been on one just reading the MLS, like, media receipts.
The dude is a menace. It's kind of funny because I feel like those media, like MLS media predictions, come back to bite them every year. Like one team uses it to their advantage.
Yeah.
But it's just, yeah, he's been a menace this year. But yeah, he's like Evander to another level, because Evander will post something about like, oh, like Extra Time doesn't talk about the Timbers enough. And then he got like Ricky Pooge, who's just like singling out like certain members from like the Apple MLS like pat season pass like crew. Yeah, he's I don't know, I love Ricky Pooge. But you know, one of my favorite trends on Instagram, that MLS Sickos page, is they have like a post that goes out every time they take a team picture. Ricky Pooge, like most guys, like have their hands like on their own knees as they're like kind of hunched over. He always puts his hands like on somebody else's like inner thigh for the picture. And it's just, they just say like, Freaky Ricky caught again.
That's wild. Seattle hosting Chicago Fire. Seattle wins 2-1.
Chicago had a sick goal in this game.
They had a pretty sweet goal.
That was awesome. Did you know, I don't know what defender it was, but they nutmegged a Seattle center back. I'm assuming it's probably Jackson Reagan. He couldn't just stomp on the guy's Achilles before he got past him. So
I think it was Yamar, actually, but I could be mistaken.
Maybe it would. I mean, if it was Jackson Reagan, he probably would have killed the guy before he even got in the inside the box.
No Rui Diaz, no Nuhu for screaming at Brian Schmetzer in the locker room last week. But Rusnak scores two PKs, so they beat the mighty Chicago Fire at home.
Also, big news, their DP gets another 14 minutes on the field this game, Pedro de la Vega. Oh, man. Yeah, we talked about it before this game, though, but we should probably talk about it on here. Raul Rui Diaz and Nuhu both left out of the lineup as they were suspended for a week after last week's game, apparently for some conduct, some conversations, and how they treated old Brian Schmetzy.
You know, Brian, he runs a tight ship in that locker room, man.
I was going to say, what do you think of this? Because we saw this earlier this season with Columbus, with Cucho getting, you know, kind of left out of the squad for a week. And you see, like, Wilfred Nance, how he handles it. How do you feel? Do you feel like Brian Schmetzer handled this the right way? Or what do you think?
I mean, personally, kind of all depends what went down. And you'll probably hear that in the coming weeks. I don't have a problem with it on surface level. I mean, each team and each coach has their own standard of what they let slide with certain players, and they all have a bar. It's somewhere. And if these star players, I wouldn't call them star players, but these legendary players, at least they're not stars anymore, but these famous, iconic players for Seattle feel like they deserve to start when maybe their performances don't warrant it, and then they get mad at Brian Schmetzer. I mean, I don't know. I don't have a problem with it at all, honestly. I think it sets up a good precedence that doesn't matter if you're an academy player or, you know, a squad player or somebody who's won a Champions League for this club. Like, you don't just get to, you know, put yourself above the badge.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think he handled it well. But as a Timbers fan, I love what's going on in that locker room right now. I can only imagine, you know, I wonder if there's, you know, lines being drawn, people taking sides. Interesting to say the least, what's going on in Seattle, but they still managed to get the win here, and they got a win last week. I mean, they're putting together a little bit of form here.
Two interesting things that happened. One, something happened with like the power at the stadium. So the last 30 minutes, if you watch the broadcast, they couldn't use like the regular camera. So they had like a field level like camera guy doing like the match. And it was just really weird. I saw that on Reddit. But this is going to crack you up, hopefully. So I saw this tweet this weekend after the game. And this lady tweets, this just in. Sounders fans just reported us for standing and cheering for the Chicago Fire. This lady's from Chicago, a big Fire fan, came from Chicago to watch a regular season game against Seattle. So pretty cool. And then she says, literally six security guards came to talk to us and tried to throw us out because these fans can't handle little opposition. Embarrassing for a team that can only score on penalties.
Dang.
And she said, I really like the city of Seattle. Until the Seattle Sounders fans called themselves wine and cheese fans. Traveling all this way for fans to be such jerks is absolutely antithesis of sports and fan culture. Get it together, Seattle. And it's just funny. Like,
I love that.
So many comments are like, classic Seattle. Hey, come to Portland for a game. And it's like all these Portland fans like,
yeah.
Don't Dude. Cheer for the other team in Seattle, man.
That's awesome. I love that. Because it's so true. I feel like...
I'm assuming she wasn't in the supporter section, and that would be the only reason I would be like, all right, that makes sense. Because, yeah.
It is funny because I feel like when I've gone to Seattle, and it's kind of expected, like, when it's a rivalry game, like, you're going to get some, like, mean looks. But it seems like the fans there tend to be, like, pretty soft. When you like want to celebrate or you want to like do something, like you get a lot of people who get like pretty upset about it. Like they want you to just sit there in silence and just like stand up and clap when your team scores and then sit back down and that's it. But I love that. I love that this lady flew from Chicago and then some stupid Redditor Seattle fan tried to like, you know, yeah, push his glasses up, tip his fedora at a security guard and have her kicked out.
Oh, man.
That's a Seattle, you're the loser of the week, dude. I don't care if you guys won. Losers of the week.
Random lady on Twitter, come to Portland.
This come on the pod, actually. Come on, get come on the podcast.
Come to the MLS Net Boys show. We can talk all day about how bad Seattle is. Newest, we'll be happy to do that.
Newest member of the
third
pod.
Member.
Random lady from Chicago.
Last game. And honestly, like, this is just MLS, man. Vancouver hosts St. Louis and a 4-3 win by Vancouver. Crazy game. Brian White hat trick. Scorpion kick, like, back heel goal just against the run of play. And just a wild win for Vancouver. A much needed win, I will say. St. Louis, the last straw for Bradley Carnell, who gets the can this morning, actually, as we're...
That is... crazy. I did not expect that at all. It's so wild. Like I was trying to process that because I read it while I was at work, and I don't know how you feel. We haven't really talked about this. I don't know how you feel about this, but I think it's a team with too high, or a club with too high of expectations. Bradley Carnell clearly had this team way overperforming above their abilities last year. Roman Berkey kept that team in the position they were with his like absolutely outstanding play, and then they've kind of reduced back to the mean this year, and it's like they can't handle it. Like they want this team to always produce over what, you know, their stats say they should. And it's just, I feel like that's a huge mistake from St. Louis. I don't know what they plan on doing halfway through the season. I mean, it's right before League's Cup. Maybe they just plan on not really caring too much about that and having some time to bring in a new coach. But to me, I think that's a huge loss, and I think it's going to be a huge gain for another MLS team that picks him up.
The only thing I can think of is I've seen some people speculate online that this year hasn't been great, but the locker room and the way he treated some of the players was not great. I heard that's a big reason why Samuel Adeniran hasn't been getting game time and wanted to leave, was because his relationship with Carnell had fractured. And then somebody pointed out today, like, Samuel Dennerin was back in training after he was kind of frozen out the day after Carnell gets sacked. So maybe some issues like deeper in the locker room. Maybe he lost the locker room, honestly. He's a good coach. Like a lot of MLS teams would be lucky to have him. He was an assistant coach, so he could definitely, you know,
go back into that,
be on another squad. So
it'll be interesting to see what happens with St. Louis here because, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I feel like they didn't necessarily set him up for success this year. I mean, they sold off a lot of key pieces. I mean, they just sold Aziel Jackson to Columbus, like a, you know, basically a direct rival in the league. I don't know. I mean,
it's going to be an interesting finish to the year and then off season. Are they going to be... They had such a strong start, but are they going to regress and take, like, the Austin path, right? Not exactly the same, but Austin had that really good year, and they fell off pretty hard. Was that just lightning in a bottle last year with St. Louis, or do they come out strong? Because they did so much so good. The stadium, the fans, the second team, great signings, good coach.
All of that sounds exactly like Austin.
And now,
almost identical to Austin.
And now they're just kind of in the dumps just fighting for like a last playoff spot, right? So makes you wonder.
And as soon as Roman Berkey's contract is up, this team I think is going to take an even bigger step backwards.
Right.
It was a few weeks ago. I forget who they were playing, but like there was a game and like right towards the end, like this team just couldn't build up at all. And Roman Berkey just picked the ball up like 45 yards out and just took a shot at goal. It's like, and then like he just starts screaming at the team after he took a shot, and I was like, man, that
is not a great sign.
That is not a good sign for this team right now.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. In slightly different news, before we finish this, Fafa Pico scored, and I don't know if it's true or not, but seems like Vancouver's kind of been a good fit for him, right? He's popped up with some goals here and there.
I don't like him, but yeah.
I read online via Twitter that he's kind of homesick, wants to be back on the East Coast, and kind of wants out of Vancouver, which is weird because Julian Gressel had a similar thing in Vancouver.
Dude, what's wrong with Vancouver, man?
I don't know.
Sartini's running these boys away.
I have no idea what's going on. It seems like a cool place to live, but where would you put up like a potential landing spot for him? I saw somebody commented, get ready to learn Nashvillian under it, but it's like he just came from there. I doubt he goes back. What's a team that could use a
Inter Miami?
Just follows Julian Gressel like exactly. Hey man,
I don't
Columbus
know.
Columbus Crew. It's, he converts him into the Aiden Morris replacement, and he just turns him into an elite six.
I could see him being like one of the wing backs for like Columbus Crew. Jacob just spit his water up on himself. Oh man, did you know his actual name is Fabrice?
I knew it was something like interesting. I couldn't remember what it was.
I could see Columbus. It seems like Chicago would pick this kind of player up. You already know that'd be Chicago. I mean, the Columbus of the East or Colorado of the East, right there.
That makes sense.
I could see Chicago picking him up.
DC United to me.
DC like as well. Place. I mean, he's from New York, so maybe he goes. I don't know. I don't think the Red Bull. Neither of those teams would pick him up. Actually,
to me, Atlanta feels like a place. A lot of these MLS kind of guys who have been in the league for a while, kind of getting up there in age, forward players, they'll always like land a guy like that. Like they had Dom Dwyer for a bit. They had Miguel Berry, Derek Etienne Jr.
You know what actually would make sense? I feel like Cincinnati would pick this dude up just for no reason whatsoever.
And then he'll just go to like Houston next year or
yeah,
Colorado.
Yeah, back to the West.
New
England. I mean, we're just naming every team, but like,
hey man, I'd rather do this for like 3 hours straight than watch a Man City game.
That's true. Honestly though, I think for me the top two teams I could see him going to, Chicago for sure, He does seem like a Wilfred Nancy guy, so maybe Columbus, but I think New England picks him up. I could see Caleb Porter. They just seem like they've built their whole team off just like MLS old heads.
Right.
Like MLS unks, basically.
I didn't think of them. That I can see that happening, especially like...
They're down in the dumps. They need something to kind of help them build a little bit. And, you know, they just bring in a Fafa Picoat. Also, I just realized New England's jumped Chicago Fire, so now Chicago's last in the table.
That is crazy.
That is so sad, dude. And Chicago has two more games played than New England.
That's right. New England has some games in hand. Wow, that's depressing.
The only team worse than Chicago is San Jose.
Man, why is it always got to be those teams, man? I feel bad.
It makes you want like a year where like San Jose and Chicago are duking it out for the Supporters Shield, dude.
Honestly, it makes you just sad.
makes you sad, man.
Even Colorado is doing good this year. They've got some great signings. I mean, they were in first place in the West a few years back, right? I want San Jose to experience that just for 9 months.
Just
what it feels
months.
Like. Give me Chicago even as like a fifth seed team.
Dude, I want like one of those teams just to like sign some partnership with like Real Madrid and then just get like all these old like get Toni Kroos and Modric to come into like San Jose and just blow the league up. That would be awesome.
You got Andrew Gutman just bombing down, just like
whipping the ball in to like
getting like a pass on his chest from Luka Modric.
Yeah. You got like Carvajal on the right hand side. Oh man, that'd be awesome.
That's this week in MLS.
Anyways, my new favorite stat of MLS right now is Mateus Bogusz has the same amount of goals as Lionel Messi in MLS.
¿Dónde está Lionel Messi?
Anyways, that is this week in MLS. There's been some other news that's come out. I think we'll start with the firings first. We kind of talked about some of them, but we didn't go down all of them. We talked about Carnell out in St. Louis. We talked about San Jose, but we didn't talk about Lucci Gonzalez getting the boot a week or so ago. What do you think?
I mean, it's twofold for me because if they would have kept him, I wouldn't have batted an eye. I don't think he's the problem there. But also,
I don't think so either.
Maybe they strike gold on some coach who just, you know, really rallies this group together and makes them, you know, playing better than the sum of their parts. But things aren't going to change with them just hiring somebody, I don't think. They've had two good coaches on paper. Matias Almeida, Latino Snape, as you called on episode one last year. Lucci Gonzalez seemed like a good coach on paper.
I think he is a good coach. I mean, what he did with Dallas was great, and it seems like San Jose is the problem.
If I was another team who needed a coach, he wouldn't be too far down on my list of, you know, people I'd be interested in, so... Just San Jose, man.
It's kind of sad. And it was kind of interesting because I was listening to a podcast where they were talking about Lucci and when he took the job in San Jose, a lot of people were saying like, oh man, he shouldn't have taken that job. It's not a good job to take. I was kind of thinking about...
They may have been right.
I mean, true. And I was kind of thinking, you know, like, oh man, how are they going to find a coach that's going to be one like willing to take this San Jose job, like a top tier coach? But then you kind of have to remember, like, there's no promotion relegation in the US, so there's only what, how many teams are there in the league? Like 52 now. I mean there's what, 30 teams?
30 next year, yeah.
30 teams, so this is one of 30 top tier jobs in the US for coaching soccer. So there's only 30 guys that can have this job in the entire country. So there's still that appeal there for a lot of top tier candidates. I think if you have other jobs open next to it, like a St. Louis, like a Dallas, I don't think San Jose is going to be drawing anybody over those other two like markets. But I mean, I think they still are going to be able to pull in a good coach, but I feel bad for Lucci. I mean, I feel bad, but at the same time, I think it's a good move for his career to get out of San Jose.
Next up, his old stomping grounds, FC Dallas. Let's go of Nico Estevez. If you're Dallas, do you take Lucci back?
It's kind of
tricky.
I don't know if I would. I think I would move in a different direction. I think Lucci did a great job there, but I think it looks bad on the club and the FO if you go back to the guy that you just had that you let go and then bring him back in. I think it doesn't really make a ton of sense. I don't think it makes their club look like they have a ton of forward planning. So I think they go in a different direction. I don't know exactly who they bring in. Maybe they go with like a Bradley Carnell, guy that's proven to bring in young talent. I mean, they have a good academy there. Plays a pretty forward style. I think it would fit Dallas well. I don't know if Carnell's ready to jump right back into the league like that, but he's an option. I don't know. What do you think? Do you have any like ideal candidates in mind for this job?
Not really. I mean, to me, it seems like I don't see Dallas really going for like some big proven MLS. Bruce Arena or a Gio, somebody who's been in the league for a while. To me, they're going to go for like some younger, maybe like another academy coach or like something like that. Maybe they go Pamo Duca because he worked in their organization. I have no idea what Dallas does.
I would love Pamo Duca to come to Portland, dude. I miss that guy. But no, that would make sense. I agree. I think they'll go with somebody young, but currently three jobs open in MLS. It's kind of wild that's happened since the last time we recorded. I mean, four jobs open, actually, because Nashville's still open currently.
Yep.
That's wild. And Atlanta.
Atlanta, too, yeah.
Five jobs open in MLS right now. That's wild to me, dude. Jeez. Anyways, we'll move on to the other big talking point of this week. The MLS All-Star roster has been announced. Jacob and I, on the last episode, we submitted our ballot. We had the correct All-Star starting 11. And I'll read it off right now. We had Zach McMath in goal. We had DeAndre Yedlin at right back. Matt Miazga and Justin Glad partnering at center back. Luca Orianu at left back. We had Aiden Morris at CDM. Unfortunately, he got sold, so he's ineligible. Who would you put there instead of Aiden Morris? I think we had talked about Nagby.
Be a good heritage pick. Shoot, man. Give me...
Who's that young CDM at RSL? I always forget his name. The young, like, he's like a teenager right now. And he's, like, blowing it up in the league. Oh, my gosh.
Anelli?
Yeah.
Anelli?
Emeka Anelli. He's good. He looks solid.
Throw him in there.
All right. We got Emeka Anelli. we got Evander and Lucho as, like, the two kind of attacking mids. And then we got Buonga, Benteke, and Chicho Arango up top. That would have been the perfect MLS All-Star team, but no. MLS had to go and just blow it up and do MLS things. Should I read them off? Should I go down the list?
let's look at the list.
Forwards down to goalkeepers or goalkeepers to forwards?
Let's work our way up.
So we'll go goalkeepers to forwards.
Let's just read them and then see... You know, if you have any hot takes, anybody you think should have been there, shouldn't be there.
I mean, we were only allowed to vote for one player per position. So I guess we could kind of talk about who shouldn't and should be here. All right. Go for it. Hit me with the goalkeepers.
Goalkeepers, man. You got Roman Berkey, Hugo Lloris, and Martin Paz. And you know what's wild, actually, about Martin Paz from FC Dallas? He obtained his passport in May and he's eligible to play for Indonesia. So he explored that opportunity, and they have a massive online presence, apparently. Like, not quite as big as like the Turkish fans on like Instagram you see, but they have a huge wave of people, and he got the third most votes out of this entire thing. So just behind Messi and probably Suarez.
That's insane to me, because this was like, out of all the names I saw, this one made the least amount of sense to me. Yeah. I was really surprised to see Martin Paas on there.
Because out of the goalkeepers, Berkey and Lloris were coaches' selections. Paas was the one voted in. Because I think 12 players get voted in, and then two are commissioner picks, and then the rest are just the coach picks in, which is Wilfred Nancy. But yeah, so kind of interesting. Defenders, you got Jordi Alba, who was voted in, Rudy Camacho, coach's selection. Justin Glad was voted in, which was, we were right on the money, man.
We were part of that right there.
Aaron Herrera for DC United was voted in, which was really interesting. Thiago Martins, NYCFC, coach selection. Steven Moreira, coach's selection. Lucas Ariano, coach's selection. Miles Robinson voted in. And then Keegan Rosenberry, coach's selection. That's my favorite one there, man. I love seeing a player like that get...
So that means that Wilfred Nancy handpicked Keegan Rosenberry.
The same squad with Lionel Messi. See, I like that because he's a player who's not quite good enough anymore to, like... He's not going to make this thing, you know, unless he has some bang-out season like Justin Glad, apparently.
It's so wild to me because Columbus and Colorado have no, like, real, like, crossing connection here. Like, why?
Why did he pick that?
Why is Wilfred Nancy just dissecting Colorado film, and he just loves what Keegan Rosenberry brings? But,
and
I love it, though. I love that he got on this roster.
And he's not a player who you would see probably get, like, a commissioner pick either, like Kai Kamara has. So,
I love it. I think the one guy on here that, I mean, surprises me more than Rosenberry, it's probably Thiago Martins. I think he's okay. I don't think he's any better than... I think if Matt Miazga was healthy, I think he takes that spot instead. Aaron Herrera, surprising, but I saw a lot of people talking about him online. I think he's had a pretty standout season for DC United. So,
yeah,
I'm not upset with any of those picks. Jordi Alba, honestly, I think is a good MLS player. I mean, I'd said this in a previous episode, but I think if like Inter Miami, like that was like their guy that they got, and they never got Messi and Suarez, and they just had like Jordi Alba, I think we'd be looking at that team completely different because he's a stud. The way this guy's played in MLS has been awesome.
For sure. Moving on to the midfield, Ricky Pooj voted in, Darlington Nagbe, commissioner. You had Nagbe, like I said, commissioner pick. Pretty cool. I just said that twice for fun. Hany Mukhtar, coach's selection. Robin Lud, coach's selection. Hector Herrera, commissioner pick. Ryan Gauld, coach's selection. Evander, coach's selection. Matthew Chaunier, coach's selection. Sergio Busquets, voted in. Lucho Acosta. Who is your fraud?
Ryan Gauld. Absolute fraud. I hate everything about Vancouver and their stupid, false, working man's number 10, unrelentless work ethic. On both sides of the ball. Ryan Gauld's a fraud. I think it's a joke. I want to see players that actually have some flair and some pizzazz and something entertaining about them, not some Scottish bloke that just sprints up and down the field and then ends up in like on like a late back post run for a tap-in.
People are going to think we're haters because of that if anybody's just a Vancouver fan turning in. Mine is Chaunier. Dude has... I don't want to... overcomplicate this. Man has 2 goals and 3 assists. And
is he more of an attacking mid? I thought he was more of like a deep lying presence for Montreal though. The thing with Ryan Gauld, he puts up good numbers, but it's just zero entertainment when I watch that guy play.
Okay.
It's like Ben Zemanski if he got like goals and assists.
So why are we hyping up Chaunier who's leading this as a number 8, number 6 spot? If that's where he plays, I don't really know, man. I don't watch Montreal too often, so call me a fraud.
Shame on you.
They're in 10th place, So it's not even like he's like a good standout like mid.
And they don't know, actually, man. Montreal won't even renew his, like, they aren't giving him, like, a pay rise, and they have, like, multiple DP spots open right now.
This is the thing. I feel like they're just inflating him so they can say, oh, two-time MLS All-Star Matthew Chaugnier before he goes to, like, diddly-doo in the championship and
that
rides the bench.
That guy is
going to
have more All-Star appearances than Diego Chara. That's disgusting.
That's disgusting.
That's disgusting.
That's
him,
an awful thing.
Ryan Gauld, I'm going to be so disgusted with this league before I go to bed tonight, when I look up MLS All-Star appearance list and I see the names on there that have more than Diego Chara.
How does Chara not get in on a commissioner pick, but Hector Herrera does?
Because Don Garber's racist.
Agreed.
I'm sorry.
Luis Juarez. Next for forwards, voted in Diego Rossi, coach's selection. Lionel Messi, voted in Cucho Hernandez, coach's selection. Denny Bouanga, coach's selection. Bernadeschi, coach's selection. Benteke, voted in, and Chicho Arango. I don't have any analysis other than it's funny that Chicho or Lorenzo Insigne, like highest paid player in MLS up until Messi joined. He was brought to be their star, like, you know, forward attacking presence. And Bernadeschi was a star player, but, you know, not really on his level when he was brought in. And this guy playing as a left wing back made the All-Star team
as a forward.
he's had a good year, though, in all honesty. But, yeah, that's it for me.
I agree. I don't really have any complaints with that forward bunch there.
Honestly, everyone I think I don't have a problem with or should be swapped out.
Only other guy I think should maybe be like in there with a shout is Dejan Jovalic, because he's fourth in the Golden Boot race right now, tied on goals with Suarez and Messi. maybe he should be getting a little bit of a shout, but seems like nobody's even remotely discussed him this year.
He'll be busy playing chess, so it doesn't matter.
Anyways, that kind of wraps it up. I guess we have some predictions we need to go through. Man, we rarely do these anymore.
Yeah. It's been a while.
Weird.
I'm on 32 points.
Yeah, this sucks.
My pal
Chase not do predictions,
on
actually.
16. We're doing 3 points if you guess.
You didn't have to read that out loud. It's all right. cut that out.
If you get the score and result correctly. 1 point if you get the result correctly. We got 3 matchups here. St. Louis hosting San Jose, the recently fired coaches derby. I'm going 2-1 San Jose on the road. It's going to be Hernan Lopez just embarrassing Berkey.
See, I was thinking San Jose at first, but then I thought about their defense and how terrible their defense is, how terrible their goalkeeping is, and how like St. Louis just wants to like run the ball straight down your throat and score goals. And I'm going 1-0 St. Louis. I think both these teams are going to be, it's going to be like more of a midfield battle, just zero real possession in this game.
Samuel Adeniran with some new freedom scores a
just
outside of the
absolute
boot.
Just screamer into the top right. I'm going St. Louis 1-0 though. But next up, another just stinker game though. Toronto versus Orlando. I think Orlando's winless in 7 games now. Toronto having a little bit of a bad streak of form, a little bit of a downturn here. I'm going 1-1. I see a little bit of a draw. I really was going to pull for Orlando to win this. Like, I think a little bit of a bounce back game when Toronto's kind of on a downturn. But I just can't see them pulling it out in Toronto.
I'm going 1-0 Toronto. But this, you do recall last season, this matchup in Toronto, Duncan McGuire sent Michael Bradley all the way to Norway packing to be an assistant coach for his daddy.
That was brutal.
And man just destroyed him in his last ever game. But that won't happen today. Toronto 1-0.
The difference between a guy like Michael Bradley in his last ever game versus a guy like Dairon Asprilla, you know, just different levels and quality right there. Next up, though, we got El Trafico we have LA Galaxy hosting LAFC.
This will be at the Rose Bowl, I think, actually.
I believe so. And I'm going LAFC 2-1. They're on a tear. I think they're tied on points with LA Galaxy right now.
They're both at the top, so this is a big...
This one was tough. Because I could absolutely see LA Galaxy squeezing out a win here. But the vibes are high with LAFC. I think they've won like 8 of their last 9 games or something like that. They're on an insane streak right now. I see them pulling out a 2-1 win.
I can see that. I'm going, honestly, either way I can see it, draw or either team win. I'm going 2-2 affair.
I feel like these games end up being really tight either way. So it'll be a fun game to watch no matter what. It was funny because I feel like when this rivalry first came about, it was so forced by the media and it didn't really live up to the expectations. But now that they've had like a little bit of history under their belt, it's definitely like a fun game to watch, like almost like a must watch in MLS now.
Yeah, though, that first game set the bar way too high for it with Zlatan and, you know,
yeah,
Galaxy were down 3-0, come back and win 4-3. And then they had that one playoff game that was really, really, or series that was exciting. But yeah, it hasn't been, there have been good games, but like, I don't like how MLS schedules the rivals 3 times a year. I think that kind of,
when you devalues it a little bit.
When you see them so often, it makes them less special, in my opinion. When you got them playing 3 times and then in, rest in peace, but like in the U.S. Open Cup or other things like that, and playoffs, and it should happen so much, in my opinion.
It's kind of funny because like MLS, I think, does that poorly. Like, I don't like that they do 3 games for these rivals, but I do like that they like tend to do like a rivalry week where they put like all these rivalry games in 1 week. I think that's fun.
That's great.
But I wish they would like cut it back and then have more like interconference games where they play, you know, they play another Eastern Conference team, or
I'd much rather have,
I think that.
That
would be more entertaining. That wraps it up though. Episode 58 in the books, and we are very late to our our club session with the boys. There's gonna be a little bit of an irritated group tonight.
Follow us on X, MLS Net Boys on X. Send us a Gmail, Chicago Fire Lady.
Come on the show.
Find us somehow on the internet.
You have a permanent spot on the show whenever you want to be on our show. I'll give you stock options. I don't care.
Yeah. Anybody who digs at the Sounders, especially online, especially for such a funny reason, is an absolute just legend in my book. So come on the show.
Honestly, any fan of another team, I would love to have on the show, actually. Even like a Sounders fan, I think it'd be kind of fun.
Be really interesting.
Get somebody else, get their perspective of their like their squad, you know?
I agree. That's going to wrap it up for the MLS Net Boys show. And one thing and one thing only, don't review us, don't follow us, but get Preston Judd to come on the show.